Thanks tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Sitcoms in this hour, later on Lucille Ball's landmark series, My Favorite Husband. But right now, it's The Magnificent Montague, the first show in a series that didn't last too long on NBC from November of 1950 to November of 1951. This was part of their schedule, Friday nights at 9 o'clock, then switching to Saturdays with Monty Woolley in the title role. This episode, the first from November 10th, 1950.
Company presents transcribed The Magnificent Montague, starring Monty Woolley. Although it's been years since Edwin the Magnificent Montague left the Shakespearean stage, people still talk of his greatness, his magnetism, his charm. And the person who talks most about it is Edwin the Magnificent Montague. But today, as it must to all actors, radio has claimed him. Montague still dreams of a triumphant return to the Shakespearean stage. It is afternoon, and as it is his chore 5 afternoons a week, the Magnificent Montague is earning his daily bread as Uncle Goodhart, the shining star of a radio serial program. The program is drawing to an end. Listen.
Uncle Goodhart. Just give me one more chance. You're the only one left I can turn to.
No, no, Big Louie. I am not going to ask Sheriff Mulligan to give you back your slot machine. No, no, Big Louie. The last time I got them back for you, you promised me faithfully you wouldn't put them in the schoolrooms again. Oh, Louis, you broke your promise.
Uncle Goodhart, I'm just no good. I'm a bounder and a scoundrel.
Oh, no, Louis. There's a wide streak of goodness in you. I have seen you in that kindergarten classroom lifting up the little children so they can reach the levers of your slot. Ah, Louis, a man who loves children like that cannot be all bad. I have a surprise for you.
Uncle, you mean?
Yes. Yes, unknown to you, I have been writing to Washington for weeks. And this came in the mail for you this morning.
Oh, Uncle Goodhart, it's too good to be true.
Here, Louis, take it. Your subpoena to appear before the crime investigators.
My dream has come true.
Remember, Louis, this is your big chance for a new career in television. We're depending on you, Louis. Take the subpoena, Louis. Leave our little town. And remember, when you get on that highway of success, keep your head high into the sun and light.
And so ends another episode of Uncle Goodhart. Until tomorrow, when he meets you once again in his little cottage on the sunny side of the lane, here is Uncle Goodhart with his thought for the day.
When the boiler bursts in your neighbor's house and he sails through the roof, still standing, don't wait till he hits the sidewalk head on. Shout up and say, happy landing.
Okay, Mr. Montague, you're off the air.
Thank heaven.
Mr. Montague, I'm rewriting, and Zinser is going to direct a radio version of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Let me get this straight. You, Springer, and Zinser are going to do Romeo and Juliet.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's going to be a milestone in radio, Mr. Montague. The network is going all out for us. They've given us carte blanche. We can do whatever we want as long as it doesn't run over 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
18 minutes. I like it to run a little long for dress rehearsal so we can cut out what doesn't get the laugh.
No. And this is your tribute to Shakespeare.
Tickles your fancy, doesn't it?
Gentlemen, I will not allow this mockery to go on. 15 minutes for Romeo and Juliet. Never. I'm going right to Mr. Barry, the head of radio, and speak to him about really doing something for Shakespeare's birthday.
Barry, we had to fight with him for those 15 minutes.
He just wanted to send a telegram.
It'll be different as I get to tell him what this day really means.
Jeepers, Mr. Montague, you mean you want to help us put on Romeo and Juliet?
I insist on it.
Well, first of all, we'll have to find an actor to play Romeo.
Well, that problem is solved, gentlemen. Your Romeo is right here in this room.
He's right in this room?
Right in this room.
Right in... Oh, no, I can't possibly play Romeo. I'm the director.
But I was referring to myself.
But, Mr. Montague, Romeo is just a kid, 16 years old.
And who were you planning on getting? Jack Armstrong, the All-American boy?
We tried to get him, but he's in Chicago.
Now, Mr. Montague, let's be serious. Maybe you can give a little speech at the beginning. Recollections of William Shakespeare, a few stories of when you were boys together.
Sounds George to me.
You want me to tell of my boyhood with Shakespeare. Shakespeare died over 300 years ago.
300 years ago?
Jeepers, you sure held up well.
Oh, now, please.
You don't look a day over 100 to me.
Now, gentlemen, it's settled. I'm playing Romeo. Now about Juliet.
Hey, I've got an idea. As long as you're Romeo, how about your wife playing Juliet?
That's out of the question. Now, who can we get?
But, Mr. Montague, your wife, Lily Bowen, played Juliet opposite you for years. She was wonderful. The critics always raved about her.
That's just it. I'll be frank with you. I've always been a star. In Macbeth, I was remembered as Macbeth. In Hamlet, I was remembered as Hamlet. Richard III, I was remembered as Richard. And in Romeo and Juliet, I was not remembered. It was my wife, Lily Bohm, who is remembered.
I think I understand, Mr. Montague.
Exactly. Now let's take a Juliet.
Zinza, read off that list of actresses we were considering.
Judith Anderson.
No.
Helen Hayes.
No.
Catherine Cornell.
No.
Choo Choo O'Toole.
Choo-choo
who?
Choo-choo O'Toole. She's a model, a friend of somebody's who wants to get into radio.
I see. She's never acted.
Acted? She can hardly talk.
Gentlemen, I have found my Juliet.
The residence of Edwin Montague and Lily Bohm, Agnes the maid on this end. Start talking. Who? Hold on, it's for you, honey.
Hello, this is Mrs. Montague. Teddy, where did you get into New York? Really? You come right up and bring your luggage. You're staying here. Bye.
Somebody coming to stay. How nice. I quit.
Oh, now, Agnes. It's my brother, Teddy. He's going to stay with us. Will you get the guest room ready?
Guest room? Here's where the broom closet suddenly becomes a guest room again.
Oh, my brother Teddy in New York. I'm dying to have him meet Edwin.
That's a dirty trick to play on your own brother.
Oh, nonsense. Edwin will take to him right away.
You're not kidding. 1 hour with Montague the monster and anybody's ready to be taken right away.
Oh, now, really, Agnes, let's stop picking on Edwin. After all, he's the man I'm married to.
Ignorance is no excuse.
Oh, I'm serious, Agnes. It's just that when my brother Teddy gets here, I want him to see what a happy home we have.
Sure.
Well, we are happy, you know.
We sure are.
Oh, please. I wonder what's up. Teddy came all the way from Cleveland just to see Edwin. He's out of college now. He probably wants to consult Edwin about his career. Teddy was always interested in show business.
I'll get the door.
Hello, Lily, Agnes.
Montague.
Hello, Edwin. Here, let me take your coat.
What a day at the station.
Sit down. I have something to tell you. There's going to be a new addition to our family.
Lily, don't tell me. Agnes is having a litter.
Now, Edwin, leave her alone.
Now, don't start up with me, Buster. You know how fast I can pluck a chicken. Just think what I could do to that beard.
Agnes, please. Edwin, I have news. Guess what? Teddy is coming to stay with us.
Wonderful. That's simply wonderful.
I knew you'd be happy.
Why, of course. Who is Teddy?
My brother, Teddy.
Oh.
He thought you meant Teddy Roosevelt.
Never mind, Agnes. This is no time to bring up your old boyfriend. Now, Lily, what brings your brother here from Cleveland outside of the understandable reason of wanting to get away from the rest of your family?
Now, Edwin, let's keep my family out of this.
Good, and let's start by locking the front door and keeping Teddy out.
What a charming host. You get a warmer reception in the death house at Sing Sing.
Agnes, dear, there's still a housing shortage. You'd better close that big mouth before a family moves in.
Edwin, shame on you. You don't even know Teddy. He's my brother. And if my own brother isn't welcome...
All right, Lily, I'm sorry. Sure, he's welcome. I was just thinking of the extra cooking for Agnes. Another mouth to feed. Another stomach to upset.
Now, look, Mr. Montague, I've been cooking for you for 25 years. Has anything ever happened to you?
No.
I don't care. I'm not giving up.
Edwin, listen. Teddy is coming here for your help.
My help?
Yes. He's on the threshold of his career. I know he wants your help in getting into show business.
Show business? Everybody wants to get into show business.
When you spent your life as an actor, you can tell Teddy important things from your own experience.
Like how to get to the unemployment insurance office.
Good old reliable Agnes. Solid as a government bond. And now that she's matured, let's cash her in.
When you stay on the subject, you'll help Teddy get a job.
Your brother grew up in your father's hardware store in Cleveland. What will he do on the stage? Connect up a flush valve?
Oh, so you must be born to the purple. You must be a Montague. Let me remind you, I, Lily Boehm, also came from Cleveland, from our hardware store. And I think I did pretty well on the Shakespearean stage. Shall I get my scrapbook to show you what the critics thought of me?
Now, Lily, baby.
And what is more, the little girl from the hardware store is dying for an opportunity to do Juliet again and show you what I mean.
Lily, why are we arguing?
Why? Because you're too busy to help my brother Teddy.
Lily, who said that? I insist on helping him. And I always said show business needs new blood.
Oh, that's all I ask. Just give him a chance.
Lily, I'll teach you everything I know. I'll mold him in my own image. And when I'm finished...
He'll still be a plumber.
Agnes, why do you waste your time here? Why don't you go back to your old job... being a model for totem poles.
Oh, Edwin, stop. Teddy should be here. Oh, there he is. Now, remember your promises.
I'll get the door. Hello, come in.
Do the Montagues live here?
Teddy! Seth! Oh, Teddy, it's wonderful seeing you again. How's the family?
Oh, everyone's just fine, just fine.
Well, come in. I know how anxious you are to meet Edwin.
Well, I certainly am.
Edwin, this is my brother, Teddy.
How do you do, Teddy? I've heard a lot about you.
You did? I heard a lot about you, too.
Teddy, this is Agnes.
How do you do?
How do you do? I mean, how do you do?
Well, Teddy, you mentioned, I believe, that... you've heard a lot about me. Well, it's gratifying to find young men who still remember me from the Shakespearean stage.
Really? That's news to me.
News?
Why, yes, Sis wrote that you were on radio, Uncle Goodhart.
Is that what Sis told you?
Well, I just mentioned it in a letter. Now, Teddy, Edwin is going to help you get started in show business.
Say, that's keen.
Yes, Teddy, I'm sure there must be something you could do with the profession.
Oh, I've made up my mind already.
You have?
Yes, sir, I've taken courses in college. I'm well-trained, and I'm ready to go.
And what is it you want to be?
A radio announcer.
A radio announcer?
A radio announcer?
That's what the man said.
I used to dream about it while working in Dad's hardware store to be a big announcer. And Mr. Montague, when I heard you were a big man in radio...
Now, don't worry, Teddy. Edwin will see that you get your chance to audition for NBC to be an announcer. Agnes, take him to his room.
This way, Mr. Brokenshire.
And now, back to the magnificent Montague. Lily is home alone.
Is that you, Edwin?
No, it's me, honey.
Oh, Agnes. I thought it was Edwin and Teddy. Edwin took my brother to his Uncle Goodhart broadcast.
I was out getting more food. That brother of yours. He has a voice like a bird and eats like a horse.
Ah, it's wonderful having Teddy here. I wonder how long he's going to stay in New York.
Until he opens his mouth at NBC.
I guess so. But at least he's having a wonderful time. Edwin's going to get him an audition. He'll get that crazy idea of being an announcer off his chest. Oh, there they are. Hello, Edwin.
Hello, Lily.
Well, Teddy.
Gee, sis, imagine me in Radio City. Wow!
Edwin, is he going to give an audition?
Yeah.
I met everybody there. Mr. Zinser, Mr. Springer.
They're going to audition him tomorrow morning.
Oh, that's wonderful, Teddy.
Yeah, they gave me some commercials to study. Yeah, I better start getting my voice in shape. 1, 2, 3, testing. Hello, hello.
But you can practice later, Teddy.
The march of time! Now let's hopscotch the world for headlines. Washington, D.C. Flash!
Teddy.
And now settle down for Inner Sanctum.
Now, you're too excited. Now, let's put away your coat, and I'm sure Edwin and I will help you practice. Now, come to your room.
Well, I guess I better not strain my voice. I'm so excited, you see. 1, 2, 3, testing. Hello, hello.
Lady's voice. I better get mine in shape for Romeo and Juliet. But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the moon, and Juliet...
Edwin! Wasn't that Romeo and Juliet?
Oh, no, just warming up. Yes, Lily?
I just want you to know how sweet you are doing what you're doing.
Doing what I'm doing?
For Teddy.
Oh.
He's so thrilled and happy. Oh, look at him. Racing fire of the country!
Now, easy, Teddy, easy. Don't burn yourself out.
I know. My voice. E-I-O. Come in, Tokyo.
That's enough, Teddy. Save your voice. You have to audition for Mr. Springer tomorrow.
Oh, that reminds me, Mr. Montague. Mr. Springer said if it was all right with you...
Yes?
He said I could watch you rehearse tomorrow when you do Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, E-I-O. Quiet, Teddy.
Cassie.
Well, Edwin?
Now, Lily, baby.
Romeo and Juliet.
Now, Lily, baby.
Don't now, Lily, baby, me.
Now, Lily, baby.
You're doing Romeo and Juliet, and you wouldn't even tell me a word about it. What are you afraid of, Edwin?
Let me explain.
Time marches on!
After all these years doing Shakespeare together, and finally there's a chance.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. All the ships at sea, let's go to press. E-I-O, press.
Why? Now, listen to me, Lily.
You didn't even tell me.
Well, I didn't want to hurt you.
Hurt me?
Well, they've got somebody else for Juliet. Lily, I begged them to have you as my Juliet. On bended knee, I said, to get Lily Boehm. She's the greatest Juliet that ever lived.
Edwin, you said that.
On bended knee.
Oh, Edwin, I don't care about the part. But what's more important is the fact you wanted me to play Juliet. But after all these years, you finally said I was the greatest Juliet that ever lived. Oh, Edwin, you're wonderful. Well, what's wrong?
Oh, Lily.
Well, Edwin, what is it?
Lily, I'm a rat.
Edwin.
Don't look at me, Lily. I'm not good enough for you to wipe your shoes on. I lied to you. They wanted you for Juliet.
Edwin.
Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I.
Oh, there's good news tonight.
Lily, I'm not worthy of you. I'm not worthy of the name of Montague. Cheating my own wife out of a great role. What am I?
You're an actor. I understand it.
You do?
After all these months of being Uncle Goodheart, hiding the fact that you're Edwin Montague, this is your chance to do something great under your own name.
But Lily, I...
Please, Edwin.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Oh.
Lily, how can I ever make it up to you?
Edwin, by doing what you're doing for my brother, Teddy.
For what I'm doing? Where's the phone?
Edwin, who are you calling?
I'll show you what I'm doing. Hello? NBC? Mr. Springer's office, please.
Springer?
And all a few words from our sponsor.
Oh, Teddy, please. Hello, Springer. This is Montague. Well, listen closely, Springer. My brother-in-law is auditioning for you in Zinta tomorrow. No matter what happens, he must get a job in radio. If he doesn't work, I don't work. That's final.
Edwin, I don't want you to force Teddy on them.
Well, it's the least I can do for having done such a selfish thing to you.
The house light's dim. Maestro Arturo Toscanini mounts the podium. And we hear the beautiful strains of...
You're going to get the job.
Yes, my boy. Tomorrow is a big day for both of us. Your audition and the magnificent Montague's Shakespearean debut in radio. But hark, what light through yonder window breaks.
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? It's coming!
Mr. Zinza, have you something to say?
Yeah, let's have it quiet.
I said that.
Oh.
Now, you all have your scripts. Mr. Montague, here's a script for you.
A script from here for Romeo and Juliet? I know the part well.
And I know, but I made a few changes.
Change? You changed Shakespeare, Springer. You are a radio writer, which is one step above forgery. You dare tamper with the lines of the great bard?
Mr. Montague, I just adapted the play for radio. After all, it has to make sense to our listeners.
Very well, give me your masterpiece.
Okay, let's go. Now take over, Mr. Zinza.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Well, let's get going.
Okay, the first scene, Romeo and Juliet, street scene in Verona. That's in Italy, Mr. Montague.
I know.
Ready, everybody? Right from the opening. Music.
Presenting the Horace W. Springer production of Romeo and Juliet, starring Edwin Montague. Directed by E.E. Zinser. Written by Mr. Horace Springer from an idea by William Shakespeare.
By William Shakespeare.
Please, Mr. Montague, we're timing it. Go on.
And now, Romeo and Juliet, the greatest love story ever told.
Now, wait a minute. What's that music?
Mr. Montague, we have to set the mood.
My heart cries for you.
If you're in Arizona.
All right.
Opening announcement.
Our story opens in the little village of Verona, but it could happen in an average American town. Pittsburgh, Scranton, Omaha. This is the story of two young lovers who, against great odds, eventually found happiness.
Now wait. Found happiness? They die at the end.
Not this time I made a change.
A change? They have to die.
Mr. Montague, people don't die on radio.
The only program.
Let's go. Set the first scene.
It's noon in Verona. The streets are bustling with life.
Stop it!
Something wrong, Mr. Montague?
Oh, nothing much. It's just the play takes place in the 13th century. That's a nice, authentic street scene with automobiles and streetcars.
Oh, that? You see, Mr. Montague, I brought it up to date. Put a little of the old razzle-dazzle into the play.
The old razzle-dazzle.
Yeah, modern love story. That Shakespeare can get pretty dull. We're jazzing it up. We're shooting for the teenagers.
Well, I hope you hit them. Go on with Romeo and Juliet. It is still Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yes.
Gentlemen, it's remarkable how two minds can think as none.
Oh, thank you.
You two morons actually think that I would foul up the air with his travesty on Shakespeare?
But, Mr. Montague...
I'm going to put on Romeo and Juliet exactly as it was written.
But we go on the air in an hour. We're not prepared.
Prepared? Hi, Edwin Montague is here. All I need is a Juliet. And I'll show you the beauty, the tenderness, the romance that Shakespeare breathed into the language of Romeo and Juliet. Bring on this choo-choo O'Toole, and I'll show you a performance.
Choo-choo O'Toole? Oh, she couldn't make it.
No, Juliet.
Don't worry. We've got a Juliet for you. Okay, get Juliet in there.
Okay.
Good. Now let's go ahead. There's the balcony scene. Let's go.
Here's Juliet.
Take it from the top. Juliet, speak.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Hit it!
The only thing I could find.
No, get my wife, Lily.
The Magnificent Montague, on Tuned to Yesterday, the premier broadcast of that short-lived series from NBC, broadcast on November 10, 1950. When the show closed exactly 365 days later, it would mark star Monty Woolley's last regular radio role. You're listening to an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Richard Denning and Lucille Ball star in My Favorite Husband in an episode called Locked in the Attic, from September 23, 1949, on CBS.
Yes, it's the new gay family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. Even in the happiest of marriages, both the husband and wife have little habits that prove annoying over a period of years. With the Coopers, it's George's habit of reading the newspaper at the breakfast table. Well, unable to break him of this habit, Liz is setting up a counter-irritant. As we look in on them now, she has just started a barrage of toast munching. It's a war of nerves.
Liz.
Yes, George?
Is that toast as good as it sounds?
No, it's fine.
Liz, for heaven's sakes, do you have to make so much noise?
I'm only eating toast, George.
Well, be quiet. Eat it with your mouth closed.
Now, that's silly. How will I get it inside? Did I stuff it through my ear?
Very funny.
I'll make a deal with you. You put down the paper.
No.
Then I don't see what I can do.
Hmm.
You know, I want to be fair about this. I'll speak to Katie and ask her to buy quieter bread.
Never mind.
Or I could puree the toast and eat it with a spoon.
Anybody want more coffee?
No thanks, Katie.
No thanks, but would it be too much trouble to squeeze me a glass of toast?
Yes, I'll... Oh!
Don't mind her, Katie. She's being clever.
Oh. Oh, well, I'll get it. Cooper's residence. Just a minute. It's for you, Mr. Cooper.
Oh, thanks.
You can start clearing the table, Katie.
All right.
Hello? Charlie Nichols? When did you get in town?
Charlie Nichols? Who's that?
Oh, where have you been keeping yourself, you old horse thief?
Oh, must be one of George's best friends.
Mr. Cooper's best friend is a horse thief? That's man talk, Katie. It's the way they greet their friends when they haven't seen each other for years.
Yeah, I'm still behind bars.
That means that George is still with the bank. Oh, dear, I hope this fellow isn't a bullfrog.
A bullfrog?
Yeah, that's the name of George's old college glee club.
Sure, I remember the password.
Yeah, he's a bullfrog, all right.
Let's round up the old gang. Oh, I can hardly wait to sing those songs again. Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Oh, Katie, we're dead.
Don't worry, boy. I'll bring the old ukulele with me.
Oh, no. George hasn't seen that four-string cigar box for 10 years, and he's going to expect me to know right where it is.
Oh, he won't.
He won't, eh? You watch. He'll turn away from that phone and say, Liz, what have you done with my ukulele?
Okay, Charlie. See you Tuesday night. Liz.
Yes, dear?
What have you done with my ukulele?
Cooper, you sure know your husband. Oh, I'll be in the kitchen.
What caused that?
Nothing, dear.
Well, will you get my ukulele? We're having a reunion of the Bullfrogs Tuesday night. You know where you put it, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Now, what does that mean? Have you thrown it away like you do everything else of mine?
Now, George, I never throw anything of
yours
away.
Not much you don't. If you don't throw it away, you tear it into rags. And if you can't tear it, you plant ivy in it.
George, calm down.
How can I calm down after what happened last Sunday?
Oh.
Now, there was a blow to crush a man's spirit.
Now, you're not going to start that again.
I'm looking for a rag to wipe off the car. I reach into the rag bag. I take my hand out, and what's in it? What's in it? The tail of my favorite hunting shirt.
No. George, that hunting shirt was faded. It was torn under the arm. Most of the buttons were missing, and it shrunk two sizes.
Sure, it was just broken in.
All right.
All I can say is if you've thrown my uke away, Liz...
George, now be practical. When was the last time you saw that thing?
Well, it hasn't been long ago at all. I played it just the other night at the alumni dinner.
Do you happen to recall what year just the other night was in?
1938.
Well, now that hasn't been so long, has it? Maybe it's still on a string around your neck.
Well, that's where I should have kept it.
Now, if you'll stop accusing me, I'll try to help you. Probably up in the attic.
Well, let's go up there and get it. Should be easy to find.
Oh, you dreamer.
Well, hurry up. What kept you?
Well, you told Katie to take your glee club sweater to the cleaners. I had to find it for her.
Well, I thought it would look better. Didn't really need cleaning.
Didn't need cleaning? I had to warn Katie not to drop it. It might break.
Oh, you women don't understand. A man's old clothes are filled with sentiment.
That's sediment, not sentiment.
Boy, this attic door sticks. There.
Oh, it's stuffy up here. Open the window, George.
Okay. Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Don't move. There's someone in the corner.
Where?
Over there. He just ducked down.
George, I think...
Shh. Let me handle this. Who's there? I see you. Come out with your hands over your head.
He won't do it. Let's charge him.
Now, sis, stop it, Liz. Get in back of me.
I can't. You're up against the wall.
He's a tricky one. I wonder why he won't answer.
Well, maybe it's because he's my dressmaker's dummy.
What?
Come on, with your hands over your head.
No. That'll do. You might have told me.
Oh, well, you were being so brave, honey.
No.
Open the window. Go ahead.
I am.
Oh, there. That's better. Gets a little air in here.
Oops, the door blew shut off. Hey, how about this? The first box I looked at is marked ukulele.
Well, that's good. Open it.
Hey, wait a minute. This isn't my ukulele. It's a pair of ski boots.
Yeah, well, that figures.
What do you mean?
Well, years ago when I packed all the boxes, I didn't have the labels with me.
So?
So I went downstairs and wrote out the labels.
So?
So when I got back, I forgot which label went with which box.
So?
Stop saying that. So, so. So I pasted them on any box.
Well, why?
Well, they were all written. I didn't want to waste them.
This should be fun. A surprise in every package, just like eating Cracker Jack.
Well, we'll find it. Now, don't worry.
Well, here's a box that says ski boots. By rights, this should be my ukulele.
What's in it?
I don't know. Whatever it is, it's dead. Looks like old rotten weeds with ribbons tied around them.
Oh, that's my corsage collection.
Your what?
My corsage collection. All through school, I saved the flowers the boys sent me. I still have every one.
Does the Board of Health know about this?
Never mind. Now, put it away.
Look, Liz, the reason this attic is a mess is because it's cluttered with junk like this. Now, let's throw it out.
Take your hand off that box. It stays. For sentimental reasons.
Oh, Liz, be practical.
Well, I suppose you're right. It goes.
Now, let's see how much more we can get rid of.
Well, here's a box marked Halloween costumes. What's all this junk in here?
Hey, look at that. My wonderful electric train.
Well, I haven't heard you use that tone since you proposed.
Oh, gosh, I haven't seen this train in years.
Well, you certainly have no use for it now. Out it goes.
Take your hand off that box. It stays.
Oh, George, don't be silly.
Well, now, who's being silly? That train doesn't leave this house.
Now, that's being practical. There's nothing as useful as an electric train.
But, Liz...
In fact, we should get another one for me. We can race them every night before we go to bed.
I guess you're right. Out it goes.
George.
What?
I'll let you keep your train if you let me keep my corsage collection.
It's a deal. but let's get some of this other junk out of here.
All right.
What about those old magazines?
No, they got recipes in them. How about that tennis racket?
Well, it's a good frame. What about that old dining room table?
What about that mounted fish?
I do, too. Now, what good are those old drapes?
I'm going to make something out of them. Oh, George, we've been up here for hours and haven't gotten rid of a thing.
And we haven't found the ukulele, either.
Well, let's get some lunch and try it again this afternoon when we're stronger.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Well, that's funny.
What's the matter?
The door's stuck. The lock must have snapped shut when it slammed.
Well, pull on it.
Well, I am. Oh, it's no use, Liz. There's no lock on this side of the door.
Oh, great. Well, what do we do now? Stay up here until someone finds us?
Well, now, take it easy. We'll just call Katie and have her come up and unlock it. Katie!
George.
Katie!
George!
Katie!
George! Katie isn't here. She went downtown.
Wouldn't you know she'd be downtown when we need her? Now, who told her to do a stupid thing like that?
You did. She took your Glee Club sweater to the cleaners, remember?
Oh, that's right. Well, she ought to be back by now.
Well, I don't think that she will be, George.
Why do you say that?
Well, I didn't think we'd need her, so I told her to take the afternoon off and go to a movie.
Oh, no!
Oh, yes. Oh, look, Mr. Wood is out in his backyard.
Where is he?
Right over there. His oldest boy is working on a motorcycle. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Wood!
He's looking around.
Yoo-hoo, Mr. Wood! He doesn't see me. Up here in the attic!
Oh, Mrs. Cooper, I couldn't find you.
Hey, Mr. Wood, we're up here in the attic.
Hey, and I see you are. That's nice.
While the motor's off.
Mr. Wood, we're up in the attic and the door's locked and we want you to come up and let us out. I made it.
You'll have to talk slower, Mr. Cooper. I couldn't hear a word you said.
Oh, no. Mr. Wood, George and I are in the attic and can't... Oh, that monster. Mr. Wood, can't you do something about that monster?
Nice try, Liz. Maybe we should set fire to something and send smoke signals.
Set fire to what, for instance? Me?
Hmm. How about your corsage collection?
Oh, no, you don't.
Look, isn't that the newsboy on that bicycle?
Yes. Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy!
Where are you? I don't see you.
Up here, Jimmy. Up in the attic.
Okay, if you say so.
We wondered if you could put... Oh, he hit me right in the face with that paper.
He thought you wanted it up here.
How do you like that kid? For 3 years, he hasn't been able to hit the front porch. Today, he puts it right through the attic window into my kisser.
We're licked, Liz.
Well, at least we'll know what's going on in the outside world.
Stand back, Liz.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to break the door down.
You can't do that.
Well, there's nothing to it, Liz. I've seen them do it in the movies a million times.
Well, all right.
Stand back. Here I come.
George, are you hurt?
Oh, what happened? Oh, what am I doing over here?
Well, you bounced clear into the corner.
Wow. They must use fake doors in pictures.
Maybe they use real men.
Oh, I'm sorry I said that, George. That was cruel. I'm sorry.
Well, luckily I landed on some of your boxes.
Oh, yeah, let's see if you broke anything. Oh, George, guess what? We found your ukulele. Now you can be a bullfrog.
Well, give it to me. Is it broken? My dog has fleas.
I think when you landed, you flattened your fleas.
Yes, sir, that's my baby. No,
George.
Sir, don't be maybe. Yes,
George!
Sir, that's my baby.
George! George, as long as we're stuck up here, do me a favor, will you? Don't sing.
Yes, Liz.
What month was it when we came up here?
September.
I thought so. Look at the calendar on the wall. It's March.
Oh, Liz.
I wonder if it was a tough winter.
Now, stop it. That's an old calendar.
Well, it seems like it's been that long. George?
Yeah. Now, honey, now don't cry. Now, look, we'll get out of here before very long, you'll see. And we'll look back on this and have a good laugh.
We will?
Sure. Oh, now, sweetie. No, come on. Now, here, take my handkerchief and dry your eyes.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you my big, brave girl?
Yes, George.
Now forget that we're locked in, huh?
All right.
Now, think of this as an exciting adventure, an outing. We're having a picnic in the attic.
We're having a picnic in the attic.
That's it. Now, how do you feel?
I'm hungry. We haven't eaten since breakfast. I'm starved.
I know it. I'm as hungry as you are. But there's nothing to eat up here, so forget it.
I know where there's something to eat.
Hmm?
I saw it a few minutes ago. Now, where is it? Oh, here it is.
What is it?
Now, stay away from me. This is mine.
All right. I won't touch it. Now, what is it?
It's a piece of cake.
A piece of cake?
Yes, our wedding cake.
Liz, that's 10 years old. It's petrified.
You're just trying to get it away from me.
Drop it on the floor, Liz.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, there's a piece of cheese over in the corner. I wonder if I can get it out without snapping the trap.
Now, Liz, you're getting hysterical.
But I'm so hungry.
Well, I'm just as hungry as you are.
You are? George, don't look at me like that. You say that, George. You wouldn't like me. I'm all stringy and tough and soggy.
Yeah, don't be silly. Katie should be home any minute.
How do you know? She may have stepped off the curb into the path of an oncoming truck. Well, we'll never see her again. We'll never see anybody again. And thousands of years from now, some archaeologists will dig their way into the attic and find some bleached bones marked his and hers.
Oh, stop it now, Liz.
I can't help it. I've been in here too long. I'm stir crazy.
No, I'm beginning to think you are.
Look, we got to get out of here, even if we have to jump out the window. That's it. Jump. You jump, George. You're a bullfrog.
Hey. You've given me an idea.
Oh, I didn't mean it, George. I didn't mean it. Honest, I didn't.
Oh, I'm not going to jump, but we could make a rope out of these old drapes, and one of us could lower the other one to the ground. Here, help me knot them.
Well, George, I hate to think of your doing this. It's dangerous.
I know it, but I'll have to take that chance. Now, be very careful on the way down.
Just a moment. Who's lowering whom?
I'm lowering you.
Over my dead body, you are.
Look, you want to get out of here or don't you?
Yes, I do, but somehow I pictured me on a different end of the drapes.
Liz, I'm only thinking of you.
So am I.
Well, give me one good reason why you shouldn't go. You're weaker, you're lighter, you're smaller.
You're insured.
This is no time to make jokes. You aren't strong enough to bear my weight. So, if you won't go down, we can forget the whole thing.
Well, all right, George.
Nah, it won't be bad at all. We'll get you over the edge, and before you know it, boom, you'll be on the ground.
You mean before I know it, squash, I'll be on the ground.
Oh, nothing will happen. Now, come on, get up on the window ledge. Now, I'll tie the drapes around your waist. Yeah. There. Now, all you have to do is hang on while I lower you to the ground.
Oh, well, George, before I go, I want to say something.
Yes, dear?
If anything happens, I want you to have my corsage collection.
Nothing's going to happen.
Well, wish me luck.
Luck.
Okay.
Okay. Now, hang on tight.
Lower away.
Here we go.
Mrs. Cooper, don't do it.
Oh, Mr. Wood.
Mrs. Cooper, don't jump. Stay there. I'll be right up. Life is too sweet. Life can be beautiful. Don't jump till I've had a chance to talk to you. I'll be right up.
George, pull me back up. We've been saved.
Okay, here you come.
Up, George. Pull me up.
I'm pulling.
Hurry up, George.
Liz, what have I done?
You pulled me up so fast you ripped my dress on a nail.
Oh, thank goodness you're all right.
Open the door.
You open it. The lock's on your side.
Oh, Mrs. Cooper, you mustn't jump.
Wait, Mr. Wood, let me explain.
No, no, you couldn't give me a reason good enough. You have so much to live for. You're young, you're beautiful, you're vibrant.
Oh,
Now, listen, Mr. Wood.
Think how good life is, Mrs. Cooper. Think of your husband. Think of the children.
I don't have any children.
Well, I've got 11 children. You can have a couple of mine.
Well, Mr. Wood, you see, I really wasn't going to jump.
Of course you weren't. It never entered your mind. Don't worry. My lips are sealed. Let's close this window, huh?
Oh, please listen to me for a minute. Huh? You've got it wrong, Mr. Wood. We were simply locked here in the attic and couldn't get out.
Locked in the attic?
Yes. You see, we came up early this morning to look for George's ukulele. And when we came in, we shut the door like this and we just...
It isn't locked again.
Want a bet?
But I've got to get out of here. Now, this is ridiculous.
That won't do any good. I tried it.
Yeah, but they're waiting dinner for me. All 12 of them. My wife roasted a side of beef.
Well, I'm sorry. There's a piece of cake and some cheese here.
Oh, Liz.
Hello. Hello.
Let us out, Katie.
or something?
Oh, are we glad to see you, Katie. We thought you'd never get home.
I have a confession to make, Mrs. Cooper. I didn't go out.
You didn't?
No, I've been down in my room all afternoon asleep.
My goodness, didn't you hear us shouting and stomping around?
I didn't hear a thing. I was sleeping on my good ear.
Oh, great.
Well, let's get out of here. George, open the window a little so it won't get so stuffy in here again.
Okay.
Oh, no! Get the door! The wind is slamming it shut.
Now we'll never get out.
Oh, yes, we will. The firemen will let us out.
They won't know we're here. We can't call them.
Oh, they'll be here for the fire.
What fire?
The one that follows the explosion.
What explosion? What are you talking about, Katie?
I left the pressure cooker on the stove.
Oh, no!
My Favorite Husband has been presented through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
My Favorite Husband, on Tuned to Yesterday, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast of that CBS show, heard on September 23rd, 1949. And that wraps up this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBeaunier. Thanks for tuning in.